remote hearing at the Capital Investment Committee for April 5th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee present.
Lee present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Igbaje present. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen present.
Hansen present. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Hewitt present. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Lilly present. Representative Lucero.
Lucero present.
Lucero present. Representative Moran. Representative Moran. Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Pearson present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Rasmussen present. Representative Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. Representative Zhang.
Present.
Zhang present. And Representative Moran. All right, Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
A quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, March 31st?
Mr. Chair, I've read the minutes and I move approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 31st.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 31st. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevailing, the minutes for Thursday, March 31st are approved. Members, today we will hear all bills on an informational basis only on fire and public safety facilities. As you all recall, during our tours, we heard from several fire stations and public safety facilities, including those in Lindstrom, Hibbing, Welcome, Marion County, Cloquet, Dilworth. And we also heard presentations from White Bear Lake, Minneapolis, Shoreview, Caledonia, and Lakeville. And with that, first on the agenda today on a non-public safety related bill, Representative Hewitt, House File 3813, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we have a busy agenda today, so I'm going to turn it right over to my testifier, Mr. Biskey, to explain about the RIM. He's going to explain the project.
Mr. Biskey, please identify yourself and proceed.
He's muted.
Sorry about that. Good morning, Mr. Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Rich Biskey. I'm the Resilient Waters Director for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota, where we work to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends, so nature and people can thrive. This bill provides bonding for three important tools through the Bureau of Water and Soil Resources to partner with landowners to make Minnesota more resilient and help address the impacts of climate change by storing carbon and water while improving water quality. The first is a water storage program. With more frequent and severe precipitation, rain events, and flooding expected to continue with climate change, this program works with voluntary landowners to retain water on the land and reduce flooding when extreme weather occurs. The benefits the landowner and their communities with water storage projects helps prevent erosion and mitigate downstream flooding, benefiting the private property and public infrastructure. This can reduce nutrient and sediment runoff to downstream lakes, rivers, and streams. This is a competitive program that gives local communities across much of Minnesota the flexibility to develop water storage projects that meet and fit their local needs while producing multiple benefits. The second bill also includes $3 million for the RIM Working Lands Program that was started by the legislature in 2018. The voluntary private easement program supports avoided grassland conversion, which the Nature Conservancy's Natural Climate Solutions Report shows as a top climate solution for Minnesota. Protecting grasslands is also an important soil health measure, and eligible entities include grassland and ranchland owners like pasture-raised cattle, dairy, and other hay and grazing operations that rely on grass-based agriculture. They can enroll their land in an easement that keeps the grasslands intact. In exchange, the landowners receive an easement payment that they may use to invest in their property. Could be adding fence or making other capital improvements. And we've noticed that landowners also gain financial flexibility or stability to keep grass-based agriculture as a part of our agricultural landscape, particularly in places where we're losing sensitive grasslands. These working grasslands provide water benefits, water recharge, infiltration, storage, along with sequestering carbon. And finally, the bill includes $5 million for a RIM working lands floodplain program. Again, this is an opportunity for landowners who want to restore and maintain compatible working lands in the floodplain, like forest, pasture, hay, on floodplains that continue to be threatened by rising floodwaters and damage from these increasing severe events. The landowners continue to see flood-related crop losses year after year, particularly in some of these streams. And so this program provides them an alternative way to keep those lands productive, working, but also reducing erosion, generating revenue through forestry, haying or grazing, and reducing their financial risk. These programs are all public-private partnerships that benefit Minnesotans by reducing flooding impacts on roads, bridges, and other infrastructure like county and township roads, while also providing clean water to lakes, rivers, and streams, and supporting local economies that are responding to climate change challenges. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this important proposal forward and your support.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Biskey, are you asking for $10 million or $18 million?
Mr. Biskey.
18.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for presenting your bill. Next on the agenda is House File 2960. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always a pleasure to come back to this committee. 2960 also has a cash request in 2961. Excuse me, and I don't think we really care where the money comes from, but this is the bonding request. Here's the issue. The Dakota County Law Enforcement Center, the population includes inmates with serious health needs that should be addressed while they're in custody. And the sheriff's office provides those services, but a more effective model in a new specially designed space would improve the efficiency in that care. And I'll reserve the rest of the time, maybe have some closing comments, but I have a testifier, Patrick Enderline from the Dakota County Sheriff's Office is on.
Commander Enderline, please identify yourself and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair, Representatives. Commander Pat Enderline with Dakota County Sheriff's Office. I'm also going to try to take advantage of sharing a screen here, and I'll try to scroll through some photographs as we go through this. So quick overview on our facility. Dakota County Jail was constructed in 1988. It's a 263-bed facility. Our pre-COVID average daily population was around 205 inmates. As everybody else did, we saw that decline in 2020 with COVID to around 135. However, last year, we were back up to around 172 in it. That continues to climb. As we looked at our data, although our overall population declined in 2020, the number of inmates requiring medical and mental health care continued to climb and increased over 25% that year. As this need for support grew over the past several years, including prior to COVID, we amplified our contracted health care services, which already included medical and mental health providers and staff. This included a transition to 24/7 nursing and addition of a second full-time mental health physician. Additionally, we have an embedded social services jail treatment program supporting those with substance use disorders, as well as a contract with People Incorporated to further support those with mental health needs. While we've increased the level of services provided, the ability to properly house those special care inmates is non-existent in our facility. A major stress point is our intake area, which was last updated as a new addition in 2006. These would be some of the photographs that you see on there. This area is comprised of a larger holding tanks and single cells.
Commander Enderline, real quickly, we don't see your presentation, so I don't know if you're trying to do share screen or if a committee administrator is supposed to do that on your behalf.
I don't know why it's not going. We'll keep going here. I'll articulate it. Intake area is intended to be used as a brief stop until a housing unit is assigned. However, it's used daily as a quasi-mental health and medical ward. In fact, in 2021, we had 275 inmates housed in our intake area on suicide watch. The cells up in our intake area are considered an isolation cell. It's a 10 by 6 cell, and it's not conducive to supporting any overall health needs. Additionally, we have the two padded cells I referenced. They're intended to be used for combative inmates upon arrival. The name implies they have padded material around the entire cell to minimize self-harm, and a grate in the floor to be used as a toilet. In addition to those housed in our intake area, there are others scattered throughout our 7 housing units. In 2021, that included 503 on substance withdrawal watches, 265 on medical watches, and 739 on character watches. But character watches, those being stepped down from a suicide watch or have a history of mental illness or suicidal ideation. In addition to our regular inmate population, we may also house inmates for several months who have been committed to the Department of Human Services. These individuals are categorized as mentally ill or mentally ill and dangerous. As DHS has limited bed space, they stay with us. We also look to see if we have opportunities to transfer inmates to a greater level of psychiatric care in a hospital setting. We'll work with our mental health clinicians, as well as our social services crisis response unit to get that done. Unfortunately, the inmates return to us almost as quickly as we bring them up, as the hospital mental health beds are very limited. To start looking at the data challenges and potential solutions, we requested a third-party needs assessment for our facility in 2020. In 2021, the assessment was corroborated by Dakota County's Office of Performance and Analysis. In short, the data pointed to the need for a 30-bed integrative health services unit. This unit would specialize in supporting a variety of enhanced inmate needs, such as those on substance withdrawals, suffering from substance use disorders or mental illness, and those on specialized watches, such as suicide or medical watches. The reason the funding request is before you is due to the fact that the recipients of these services span beyond Dakota County. In fact, only 44% of inmates between 2018 and 2021 self-reported as Dakota County residents. We know the support we can provide those in our care has a direct impact on the overall health of our communities. We feel very strongly we have the systems in place. We now need the right space to support that. We look forward to this opportunity and appreciate the consideration.
Representative Jargon, quick closing comments.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. As we just heard, the Dakota County Law Enforcement Center has inmates with specialized needs, and this would house up to 30 more inmates for that specialized care, mental health, and also female inmates as well. Thank you for your consideration for this request.
Thank you, Representative Jargon, for your presentation. Next on the agenda, House File 2703, Representative Edelson, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning, everyone. This is a bonding request for $10 million. It's for a Edina Community Health and Safety Center. It's has regional significance because of three things I just want to point out, and then I will let my testifier just elaborate. We have a high number of mutual aid calls for this area, for the, what would be this department we would be expanding. We have a Tri-City partnership with our public health in Bloomington and Richfield. And then also the partnership that we've had with the University of Minnesota with the ECMO machine, which is a life-saving technology. This truck is the first in the world, and I would like to move to my testifier, Mr. Chair, which is Chief Andrew Slama.
Chief Slama, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Andrew Slama, Chief of the Edina Fire. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity today to talk about the bonding bill that we have in front of you today. This Community Health and Safety Center is located in the southeast quadrant of the city of Edina. Southeast quadrant is the most diverse and densely populated quadrant of our area. There's, in 2021, there were 6,756 emergency runs in the city of Edina and mutual aid calls. In the southeast quadrant, there are 3,093 emergencies. In 2021, there were 963 mutual aid runs serving outside of the city of Edina. 788 of these were EMS in nature. The Community Health and Safety Center provides the opportunity to combine the Public Health Division and the Fire Department under one building to collaborate to get proactive in our response. The emergency services that we serve our public today are reactive to an emergency that's already taking place. The Public Health Division, collaborating with the fire department, provides us a unique opportunity to serve the Tri-City Consortium and create opportunities and pathways for our residents and those seeking help from public service. In addition to the fire and EMS services, the fire department is part of the Minnesota Task Force One, which is a state urban search and rescue team. The state urban search and rescue team is staffed with Edina Fire Department staff and responds to the entire state for emergencies and technical rescue, urban search and rescue. Excuse me. Representative Edison spoke about the ECMO. ECMO is a vehicle in collaboration with the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota Mobile Resuscitation Consortium, and it for a first in the world vehicle that takes the operating room to the patient. We serve as the operators of this vehicle that will respond outside of our jurisdiction to expand the ECMO needs and ability to serve people outside of the metro area. The fire department has ambulance, advanced life support, and fire department responses. The ambulance in the city of Edina serves the mutual aid calls for our partners. Thank you for this opportunity today and considering this bill proposal.
I see no question. Thank you, Representative Edison, for bringing your proposal forward. Next on the agenda, House File 2809, Representative Szwinski.
Representative Chair Lee, and members of the Bonding Committee, it's an opportunity to come before you. I appreciate the chance to talk about our great project here in Southwest Minnesota. House File 2809 is a pretty straightforward bill. We're asking for about $3.6 million to really kind of build out the Merit Center. And the Merit Center is a place I know the Bonding Committee has had an opportunity to come and visit. We have a driving track, some training facilities for linemen and fire and rescue, but also police officers. And the focus of House File 2809 is really to just build out that portion for our police and fire, to build out a firing range in an area for practice with that, but also a burn unit. And that money will go towards help training our fire departments to better serve us when they're out and about. I have Jim Marshall from the city of Marshall to come and talk to us about this project. And again, appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee. Thank you.
Mr. Marshall, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. For the record, my name is James Marshall and I am the Director of Public Safety for the city of Marshall. In my role, I provide oversight to our police and fire departments, the Southwest Chemical Assessment Team, and the Minnesota Emergency Response and Industrial Training Center. In 1997, the city of Marshall began creating a facility for training and education for emergency medical responders, for firefighters, law enforcement, industrial training personnel. That initial vision developed into the Minnesota Emergency Response and Industrial Training Center, also known to us, as Representative Szwinski said, as the Merit Center. The Merit Center has teamed with Minnesota West Community Technical College to meet the need for industrial and emergency response training. The initial master plan for the Merit Center was separated into a three-phase project. Now, after 25 years, we are seeking funding to complete phase three of that master plan, which will help us provide comprehensive law enforcement, fire, rescue, and driver's training to regions in Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, and into Iowa. In 2019, pre-COVID, 7,252 individuals attended training or utilized the Merit Center. In 2021, during COVID, we had 4,127 individuals use the Merit Center for personalized training or meetings. Today, the city of Marshall is seeking $3.653 million in state funds to provide state-of-the-art training and to continue the phase plan. The plan includes an outdoor firearms training range, support buildings, and a live burn prop structure for fire services training. We know that higher demands are being placed on police officers and firefighters within our communities and legislature. and training plays a critical role in achieving those expectations. The firearms training range will include classroom instruction on use of force, basic firearm skills, tactical movements, and threat response. The effectiveness of training is enhanced when facilities are up to date and training is conducted frequently. The live burn prop will provide opportunities for emergency responders to be well-trained to respond to industrial plant emergencies, fires, and rescue operations. The completion of the final phase of the Merit Center project will be a great asset to the Southwest West Central region of our great state of Minnesota. Thank you for your consideration, and I will answer any questions or turn back to you, Mr. Chairman Lee. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Representative Hewitt.
Sorry, real quick to the testifier. This is supposedly a regional training center. Are you going to charge a fee to the region for use of it, or what's your plan for that?
There's minor fees that go along with it. To use a facility is $35 that we charge any people that want to rent the facility. Government agencies, I think it's a $10 fee. Minor costs that go along with it. We service roughly about a 19 county area, including two tribal Lower Sioux and Upper Sioux Indian communities as well. So costs are very minimal for use of it.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Szwinski, for bringing your bill forward. Next on the agenda, House File 3045, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill relates to a new fire station and training facility in the northern suburbs. We have an excellent fire department that's a real asset for the region up in Coon Rapids. Unfortunately, there's a current fire station that needs replacement, and the goal is to expand it in a way that provides help for the entire region through the addition of some training facilities. I do have the very excellent Chief Piper from the Coon Rapids Fire Department here to testify.
Chief Piper, please identify yourself and proceed.
John Piper, Coon Rapids Fire Chief. Thank you for having me today. Our current Fire Station 3 needs to be replaced due to maintenance issues and our need for more training and safety features. The station is moving from a single-family residential area to an area that is more appropriate for the noise and activity related to a fire station. In 2021, the legislature approved the Hometown Heroes Assistance Program, dedicating $4 million per year to ensure that every Minnesota firefighter has access to education, prevention, and care needed to handle a cardiac, emotional trauma, or cancer diagnosis through MinFire. Currently, one of our Coon Rapids firefighters is fighting cancer at Mayo. The design of the new building incorporates firefighter health, safety, and training needs that includes specialized heating ventilation system that keeps carcinogens out of the living quarters, a layout that keeps contaminated clothing and turnout gear on the apparatus floor. It also has significant physical conditioning equipment, quiet rooms, and circadian rhythm lighting to address mental health. The goal of the features I mentioned is to reduce our need for the services of MinFire by keeping our firefighters healthy. The training features of the new station are significant. Since the number of fires per capita have dropped thanks to public education, smoke detectors, and sprinkler systems, we must take training to a new level to keep firefighters efficient, effective, and safe. Built-in features allow firefighters to train on ladders, forcible entry, hose drills, and also search and rescue functions using a maze that's built in. The station will also be used regionally for training. The North Metro Specialized Rescue Team, which consists of fire departments from Anoka and Hennepin counties, will be based out of the station. They will be able to train for high angle and confined space rescue, rappelling, trench rescue, and structural collapse. The state bonding money that we're requesting would help ease the financial burden to Coon Rapids City taxpayers as they are challenged by other significant needs for bonding and infrastructure replacement. Thank you for your time and Representative Stevenson for bringing this forward.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chief Piper. I just like to know, we have visited various training sites in the past. How many fire training sites are there in the state? Could you help me with that, please?
Chief Piper.
Representative Earl, unfortunately, I cannot answer your question. I do not know that answer.
Representative Earl.
Right. Thank you, Chief Piper. And Mr. Chairman, perhaps we should check into that. How many are there in the state of Minnesota?
Thank you for that, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Seeing no other question, thank you, Representative Stevenson, for your proposal. Next on the agenda, House File 3138, Representative Olson B., please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The County of Jackson is asking for $8.8 million to assist them in the creation of their public safety center. I want to point out to the committee that they're able to pay 77% of this project, so they're only asking for 23% of it, and that includes an excellent mental health innovative position that they're looking to include into their center. So I've got two testifiers here. The primary one is the county administrator, and the county sheriff is there in order to answer any extra questions.
Mr. Kroesch, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ryan Kroesch, Jackson County Administrator. Jackson County has completed a facility space needs study to address the needs of for a new law enforcement center, emergency operations center, jail, government center, and courthouse remodel. Jackson County's law enforcement center and jail were built in 1976 and are now one of the oldest in Minnesota. Jails built in the 70s were expected to last 30 years. Jackson County's law enforcement center and jail are now over 45 years old. Due to changes in law enforcement, incarceration practices, and building codes, it is not practical or economically feasible to remodel the current facility to meet today's public safety needs. Jackson County is also in need of additional space for county departments that provide election administration, veteran service benefits, driver's licenses, emergency management, land records, and other important services. The jail and law enforcement center facility would be connected to the county's health and human services building, which would allow better opportunities for inmates to receive mental health services. The new law enforcement center would also provide space for expanding mental health services into local law enforcement services. A modern 911 emergency dispatch center would be built to provide public safety to county residents. The project would also create an emergency operations center that would be used to manage and provide services during emergencies like the COVID pandemic. Currently, Jackson County does not have an emergency operations center. The expanded government center would provide better handicap accessibility and enhance customer service for citizens in need of veteran services, driver's license, emergency management, land records, and other services. The new government center would also provide better security and adequate space for the administration of elections in the county. The total project cost is just under $38.6 million. Jackson County is willing to commit 77% of this project, or nearly $29.8 million. We're requesting $8.875 million from the state in bonding, or just 23% of the project. Why the need for funding? To fund 100% of this project locally, Jackson County taxpayers could see up to a 19% tax levy increase to pay for the cost of general obligations bonds on this project. Receiving the funding, state funding for this project would help reduce that property tax burden significantly. Thank you for this opportunity today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kroesch. Seeing no question, thank you, Representative Olson B., for presenting your bill. Next on the agenda, House File 3519. Representative Sundin, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee. 3519 represents a lot of work put forth by law enforcement and county board in Carlton County. This law enforcement judicial center is going to equip the law enforcement and judicial process in the Carlton County to act more efficiently and deal with mental illness and substance abuse clientele that enter the judicial system. So I have with me today Sheriff Kelly Lake, that is ready to fill us in on the details of this project.
Sheriff Lake, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Lake. I'm the sheriff here in Carlton County. And if you bear with me, I would like to share my screen here. I have some information as well on a PowerPoint. So. Our project is a new justice center in Carlton County. approximately 118,000 square foot building that will include our court system, a justice involved female program within a new jail, sheriff's office, 911 dispatch, county attorney, probation, public defender, and a guardian ad litem program. In 2020, we received a sunset letter from the Minnesota Department of Corrections that as of July 31st, 2023, we can no longer use our current jail to hold inmates. In 2020, the legislature so graciously did provide legislative support and funding for the development of our female offender program that will serve the Northeast region of Minnesota. We received $2 million for the pre-design and design of the facility to be used as a statewide demonstration project for regional programs that will address current state requirements of parity in serving our male and female offenders. And it will also utilize the sequential intercept model, which is basically an end-to-end wraparound service. Go ahead. As you can see, different intercepts from community services through arrest, court hearings in the jail, to reentry and community corrections. So full wraparound services. Our full project cost, as you can see in estimates at this time, because we are currently working through our schematic design, but at $77 million estimated. Within that jail and that $77 million, the female offender justice involved women component is just over $5 million on the high range for the estimates. Also included within that full program is B3 cost estimates of $3.9 million, which does not include renewable energy solar field. So what B3 is the energy standard requirement from the state of Minnesota if we accept even $1 of funding from the state. It's a progressive energy conservation program designed to significantly reduce the energy carbon in commercial and institutional and industrial buildings in Minnesota. Our current design does incorporate all of those B3 requirements. The initial cost estimate that was not included in our full program is an additional $2.2 million for a solar field. So our estimated total project costs, again, construction, $63 million just over. Soft costs, which are borne by the owner here, the county, $10.3 million for just over $74 million. With the additional solar field, and with the B3 included, brings our total project cost estimated at this time at to $76,491,000. So Carlton County is having a significant investment in this project. We've been planning this for over 10 years to the replacement of our jail and courts. And so the county is providing over 70% of the total project cost, and our request at $22,511,000 is just over 29% of the total project cost. And the state programs that are supported within this project are court administration, including three secure courtrooms, which includes specialty court, which is space for our drug court, and also our Indian Child Welfare Act court, or ICWA court, and also judges' chambers and jury rooms. So we're really focusing on our programs within this facility and what we can do to help the people that we serve. So we have added space, multiple spaces for additional programming that we currently cannot provide in the facility that we have. Our justice involved female unit includes a 16 bed unit. We are looking at program space and classrooms, family friendly visiting areas, a large indoor recreation and outdoor program space as well. The plan for our justice involved female program, we're looking at end to end, also working with our Arrowhead Regional Corrections, who does our probation services, and we're looking at what we can do to enhance our probation services. Our curriculum will be looking at the needs of the women that are in our program, And our programming will be trauma-informed, strength-based, gender-specific, and culturally competent. We want to look at a holistic approach, again, from end to end, looking at mental health, physical health, and just overall well-being of the people that we serve. Includes a medical area, again, the holistic person-centered care that we want to look at end-to-end, looking at the whole person. So we have been collaborating with the Fond du Lac Band in our project here, and we actually have space within our building for full-time or part-time, yet to be determined as we work with the band on what that's going to look like. This is just a current rendering of our building. Again, we're still finalizing some plans, so this may not be the exact look of the finishes and whatnot, but this is the rendering of our building. So the support that we've received, again, from the Fond du Lac Tribal Government, our 6 district judicial courts, and our chief judge, our public defender in the 6th district, and Minnesota Department of Corrections, Commissioner Schnell, as well as our Arrowhead Regional Corrections, who provides our probation services. And we are, again, this isn't just a building. We've been very intentional about our planning process and looking at systems and programs and how we can do things better from end to end to receive better outcomes. I thank you for your time, Chair Lee and members of the committee.
Thank you, Sheriff Flake, and thank you, Chair Sundin, for presenting your bill. Next on the agenda is House File 3764. Representative Grasso, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. I'm here just to quickly present and Lake of the Woods County Law Enforcement and Government Facilities. Appropriation of $60 million appropriated from the bond proceeds to the Commissioner of Public Safety, one more grants to Lake of the Woods County. Design, engineer, construct, furnish, and equip new law enforcement and government facilities to improve public safety, accessibility, the delivery of public services, and energy efficiency. This appropriation includes money to expanded mental health, veterans, election administration, and emergency operations facilities and accessibility, energy efficiency, safety, and security improvements at the facility as well. So I have one of the county board members, Ed Arneson, here to give you more details on it.
Sir Arneson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, this is Edward Arneson, County Commissioner, Lake of the Woods County. I've been a commissioner here. This is my 22nd year, and this is one of the greatest challenges we've faced as a local government. We're a county of about 3,800 residents. Our local levy is about $3 million a year, and we're looking at, if we do this project by ourselves, of bonding of approximately $1 million per year would be the payments. It would be a 35% tax increase for our local citizens, which we don't think is possible. Our location is, we're the most northern county in Minnesota. My district, part of it is the northwest angle where you have to drive through Canada. You can't even get there by car or vehicle, maybe in the wintertime by ice. So we've tried partnering with other counties. It's been difficult. The logistics make it very difficult. And the closest facility to guarantee inmate is in Thief River Falls, 2 hours away. So it's 2 hours to Thief River and 2 hours back at least. We have 8 full-time deputies. So that means half of our deputies are on the road at any given time, which it, for public safety purposes, makes it very difficult. And another problem we have is we would like to keep our low risk inmates close to home so they can be with their families as much as possible, continuing with their jobs and employment, and when they end their sentence, they can re-enter our local community. We have been active in drug courts in Lake Woods County to facilitate keeping people out of jail, but as everyone knows, every once in a while, we still need the jail and law enforcement center. The law enforcement center will also include our 911 services, which are very important and need updates. I believe our old jail was built in 1980. So with that, as all of you know, those facilities are basically obsolete, and the DOC has given us a sunset of June 30th on our existing facility, and it'll be only a 72-hour facility after that. Just one other point, we have a county of 3,800 people, but on any given day in the winter on Lake of the Woods, we have 2,500 people fishing out there that need services, and law enforcement plays a big part in keeping that safe, and I believe this law enforcement facility would facilitate that also. If there's any questions, I'm certainly available. Thank you.
Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Arneson, what is the land square mileage in the county?
Commissioner Arneson.
The question was, I caught most of it. What is the, could you repeat that?
Sure, Murphy.
What is the square mileage, or give us some idea of how big the county is geographically?
Mr. Arneson.
Oh, I suppose it's probably 120 miles from one end to the other. The lake itself is, on the Minnesota side, is 308,000 acres, plus the, I suppose from east to west, it's about 50 miles, and north to south, 120.
Okay. And is the 3,800 population spread throughout the county, or are they in one area?
They would be, there's a corridor along Highway 11, which runs from like International Falls to Drayton. So the residents in Lake of the Woods County would live along that corridor and then to the lake. So much of the southern part of the county is swamp and bog and uninhabited.
Okay, and then when the eight deputies, when the four deputies are on call, are they in the corridor area, or are they in various parts of the county?
Well, they're in various parts of the county patrolling also, because there's highways and roads and county roads. And so there's an extensive area that they have to patrol. And they also do a patrolling for the federal government for border issues. We get funding from a grant from the federal government, so some of their time is spent doing that also.
Okay, and then you said that you cooperate somewhat with Thief River Falls?
Correct.
Okay, what county is that in?
Oh, gosh. Pennington, I believe.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Grasso, any response to the questions from Chair Murphy?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you for the questions, Chair Murphy. Lake Woods County is broke up from the northwest angle, of course, by Lake of the Woods, by the body of water. And they do have residents that they have to serve up on the up in the Angle Inlet as well. And anytime there could be more than 100, there's approximately 100 people that actually live there year round. But during the summer times, not so much now because of the border issue that needs to be resolved so that people can go back up to their properties. But that population increases as well. So the sheriff's office has to service that area and be able to get back and forth there. And as has been pointed out by Mr. Artisan, that at times the only way they have to get to the Northwest Angle is by water and one corridor through the province of Manitoba. And then if it's wintertime, the only other route is across the ice, which, it has its challenges. Yeah. And then like you pointed out, in the wintertime, the population increases, I would have to say by double with all of the people coming up to enjoy the lake. And so their services are stretched very thin. And if they have to try to transport someone to another facility, it makes it very difficult. So to be able to keep people, to be able to have enough services there so that they can address all the needs of the influx of tourism and their year-round population, which like the majority along the corridor of Highway 11, but you do have the families living up in the Northwest Angle as well. So it's important to have that facility there since it is such a rural area. Thank you for the question.
Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate some of the information being given by the by the commissioner, the 35% increase in taxes and such. But I may have missed it. What I guess it was for the commissioner. What is the total cost of the project, and what is being asked for from the state?
Commissioner Arneson.
Well, the initial request is $16 million, but of course we're negotiable. But we had a architectural firm do an estimate for us 3 years ago, and at that time it was $16 million. We have saved for the project, but we can't save enough. We've got about $2 million in the bank, and we are seeking some federal help also. So. That's kind of where we're at now, but it just seems like we can't save fast enough. The costs are going up dramatically.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, again, are you saying your total cost is $16 million? If that is true, then my question again is, how much money does the county plan on putting into this?
Commissioner Arneson.
Well, at least $4 million. Is our goal, but if we have to put in more, we will. But we are limited to our tax base and what we can possibly do. So the $16 million is not that would be the most that we would seek. But if there was less allocated, that would be accepted also.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grasso, for coming to present your bill. Next on the agenda, House File 3132, Representative Freiberg.
Apologize, I'm just getting settled here. So I think, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. So the City of Golden Valley is requesting $17 million in bonding dollars for the construction of a new remote fire station. The city has carefully studied its operational and facilities needs over the past several years, engaged the community, and developed a long-term plan to update its buildings. The construction of a new remote station is critical to increase efficiency and emergency response capacity. This project has regional significance. The department responds to incidents throughout the West Metro, including this past weekend to a house fire in Crystal and an apartment fire in New Hope. Here to talk about the city's plans are Assistant Fire Chief Bethany Brunsell and Physical Development Director Mark Novinsky.
Deputy Chief Brunsell, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bethany Brunsell. I'm the Assistant Fire Chief for Golden Valley Fire Department. As Representative Feiberg mentioned, we are looking to build a new remote fire station. Several studies have identified that we need to right size our fire department. We currently have 3 fire stations, and we need to bring that down to 2 fire stations to accommodate a change from a paid on call staffing model to a duty crew scheduled part time staffing model. Neither of our stations 2 or 3 that we currently have will be acceptable to be that secondary station. In part, both of those stations were built in 1979 and 1980, so they are outdated. They also geographically are not ideally located. One of the stations is located right by the Minneapolis city border. The other one is located very near the St. Louis Park city border. So we need a station that is better geographically located to serve the majority of our city. We also need to have a more modern fire station. The stations 2 and 3 were built at a time when we didn't have a pull-through fire station, so we need to back our fire trucks in, which poses risks to firefighters as well as the trucks and our building. The apparatus bay doors, where they do have to back these trucks in, are very narrow with just mere inches on either side, which is a safety issue as well. The stations are not built to accommodate what we've learned about firefighter cancer. So we have turnout gear stored right by fire trucks, whereas can get soot and carcinogens from the trucks on it. So we need to modernize our stations to accommodate that. We also have stations that are not truly built to accommodate both male and female firefighters, as well as being ADA compliant. So new station will help us reach those goals as well. Really, our current fire stations have no capacity to do hands-on training in the fire station. So by building a new station, we can incorporate some training aspects into that new station, which will allow us to be able to provide training not only for our own firefighters, but be a resource to some of our neighboring fire departments. Right now, for a lot of our training, we do need to take our firefighters out of the city, which means we either have to pull in other crews or have firefighters that can't participate in that training. So by having more training capabilities within our own city will help us better train for what we need to do as firefighters, as well as serve our city. And it will be a way that we can complement what some of our neighboring fire departments have so that we can use some of their facilities, they can use some of ours. So this isn't going to be a true regional training facility, but it's going to be more some training capacity that will complement what some of our neighbors have and address some of the weaknesses between our neighboring fire departments. Thank you so much for your consideration, and I'll stand for any questions.
Seeing no question, thank you, Deputy Chief, and thank you, Representative Freiberg, for presenting your bill. Next on the agenda, House File 3932, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And very quickly, I want to turn over to testifiers again. I know our time's left short. I just need you to pay close attention to the city of Rosemont when they talk about their new police station. Number one, they get no LGA. Number two, they are designing this to the new mode of policing, the smart mode of policing, and also to protect some of their assets. I'd like to turn it over to the city of Rosemont at this point. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor or Mr. Martin, who's going first? Please identify yourself. And
I'll go first. Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee, and thank you for allowing us to share our combined police and public works building. Our community was established 1858, same year the state of Minnesota became a state. In our first 100 years, we grew to about 2,000 people. In the next 50 years, we grew moderately, but in the last 2 decades, 20 years, we've added over 11,000 people to our community, to our current population, approximately 26,000 people. Our police and fire, police and public works buildings, clearly we have to add, especially as we continue to grow. Specifically, our police department has a square footage of approximately 8,000 square feet, less than a third of what is needed for our size of our police department. As Representative Hewitt mentioned, since 2002, we have not received any LGA funding, so 2 decades now. And with that, Logan Martin, our city administrator, is on here, and he'll go over the details.
Mr. Mayor, can you identify yourself for the record first?
I'm Mayor Bill Drosty, Mayor of Rosemont, Minnesota.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Logan Martin, Rosemont City Administrator. Thank you so much for your time, and I will keep it brief here to respect all of your time. Thank you for getting us on the agenda. As the mayor and Representative Hewitt mentioned, we are really excited to be in front of you today with a request for bonding support for our combined police and public workstation. As the mayor mentioned, we are a rapidly growing community, and our facilities have far outgrown our facilities. And a 2017 community facility task force confirmed a significant need for both police and public works facilities. Specifically focusing on police, we do have a visual if we want to throw that up just to show one of the partnership opportunities that is here, but I'll talk about a couple of partnerships. The first, we are engaged in a pilot program with Dakota County that is a community coordinated response program. We have an embedded mental health professional inside of our police department that serves right now about 30 hours a week. Going out on mental health calls, as you folks know, is the prime example of the 21st century model for policing. And so we've got an embedded mental health professional, but no space to put them. And so one of the benefits of the new facility is we will have an office facility and appropriate mental health spaces for our new focus and necessary focus on mental health policing. This is an opportunity also to build a state-of-the-art emergency operations center that will be utilized by Dakota County partners, our special operations team, our drug task force, and other communities around us. So a bunch of opportunities for partnership. And then maybe the last partnership I'll mention, separately progressing through the state legislature this year, is a land swap request. And so I know the bonding committee didn't have a chance to tour this facility, but this facility is located on the northern 20 acres that we are being given by the National Guard, thanks to a partnership with the National Guard and the support coming from the legislature this year, that will place this facility north of a National Guard maintenance shop on Biscayne Avenue in Rosemount. So we are getting 20 acres from the National Guard to build this facility, which is a fantastic partnership, not only because the National Guard asks us to patrol their campus once per hour to protect and monitor their assets. We will now be embedded on the grounds of their campus, monitoring their assets when they are there for repair. So this is machinery from the National Guard campus out on Highway 3 and other facilities around us comes here to get repair. Our police station will now be on the grounds of that campus to monitor that as they are under repair, which has been a request for many years from the National Guard. And then a separate component of this is our public works facility. I know that's less of a focus today, but just real quickly, we have assets from our public works crew spread throughout the entire community in water towers. We're renting storage space. We have assets stored outdoors, rusting under the elements, not attractive as folks drive by. And so this will allow us to encapsulate and appropriately protect all of our public works assets as we are a growing community as well. So with that, I'll rescind my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I've been listening to this, as a former city council member myself of a rapidly growing city, we had very similar struggles with city equipment, plows, and other things sitting outside being weathered, the need for water towers, the need for a multitude of things that every growing, rapidly growing city needs. And this is the same across the entire state. And now being a representative of several rapidly growing cities, these are the pains of growing. And I'm not going to ask any questions, but it's just as I'm listening to this, it is the responsibility of every community to plan for these things. And again, it is just the pains of growing. And so as a state representative, I just have to wonder in my mind, is it the responsibility of statewide taxpayers to fund these local projects for rapidly growing communities? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And like to ask, what is the cost here? What is being asked for in bonding for this project?
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The cost of the facility, we have budgeted into the previous member's comment. We have budgeted and planned for $30 million cost for this facility. We were prepared to fund that cost. It is now sounding like with inflationary impacts and supply chain issues and everything else that we're always able to point to, it sounds like it's going to cost more like $45 million. And so our budgets are prepared to fund that. We weren't surprised by this. We are budgeting for this. However, we were not prepared for the impacts of 2022-2023 bidding season. So that's all I would respond to kind of in both questions to say that the support is needed and would be much appreciated to protect our taxpayers from the significant impacts of inflation and the realities of the common day.
Representative
Mr. Chair and Mr. Martin, you are making a request of us. How much money in bonding are you asking for?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, the bill as presented is $31 million, which I believe Representative Hewitt can respond if he has any comments on kind of how that number was selected. But as I mentioned, we've got prepared funds for a large portion of this, so we do not need the full $31 million by any stretch.
Representative Hewitt.
Yeah, they're looking for help, Representative Erdahl, and the overruns and the cost of this are what they're concerned about with the new construction. They were prepared to do this by themselves, but they did turn to me later. This is coming in late in the ask, as you know, and they're just looking for some help. So I think we'd have to sit down together and negotiate what, if anything, possibly the state can do for them. And I just want to make another comment. You know, in these situations in growing cities, it's no different than sewage treatment plants or anything like that. Once they get big, you know, basically the cities are going to have to reach out to us for help. So just kind of looking at that phase, that's kind of where Rosemont is right now. They're running into a lot of expenses and they can handle a lot of it. They got a good tax base, but they do need help. Again, they're one of the cities that get no LGA. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. We're going to do this. We'll figure that out in the future.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for presenting your bill. Next on the agenda, House File 4583, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 4583 is a bonding request for $25 million to help build a safety center replacing the current Rice County Jail, one of the oldest county jail facilities in the state. The Department of Corrections has recently downgraded the jail due to less than the required amount of recreation and programming space. And the new facility will provide more space for mental health, substance abuse treatment support, as well as other supports. Computer lab, gym, flexible classroom space will allow for these programming options to be held at Safety Center too. So with me to testify to say more from Rice County is Sarah Folstead, and Rice County Sheriff Jesse Thomas and Facility Director Matt Burdick are also here for questions.
Sheriff Thomas, welcome to committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members.
I don't know if Sarah Folstead is seen as a primary testifier or Sheriff Burdick.
We can hear you, Sheriff Thomas. Please proceed.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you. Please proceed.
All right. So we're looking at building a new public safety center to replace what we currently have, which was built in 1975 is when we moved in. As designed, the new public safety center will offer a space that is more conducive to inmates' mental health, emotional, and physical well-being. Housing units will allow for natural light and access to amenities while providing for the safety and well-being of those in acute mental health crisis or withdrawal. Mental health specific unit will have a softer and quieter atmosphere with natural light. The unit will include an acoustically designed commons area separate from the general population. There will be adequate program space in areas where detainees can work on educational classes. There will also be recreational space for the inmates to get the DOC required rec time. We'll continue to offer Project Intercept, which is a trained licensed social worker who meets with detainees to look for mental health concerns and chemical dependency and connect them with necessary services before and after they're released. At some point, most individuals who come into our jail will be released back into the community. Providing these amenities and opportunities helps direct them away from criminal behavior and towards a productive lifestyle. On the law enforcement side of the building, we will bring our task force over from the city of Faribault. Currently, I have two staff using a storage closet for their office, and I have 2 to 3 deputies per cubicle, and our evidence storage is very inadequate for what we need. That's all I have right now.
Representative Lippert, do your other testifiers, are they going to have any remarks too?
I believe so, Mr. Chair. Ms. Folstead is...
Ms. Folstead, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yep, good morning. My name is Sarah Folsett. I'm the County Administrator for Rice County. I apologize, I'm also on another screen, but I lost my audio, so I'm now under Sheriff Thomas here. So our current operations, we operate out of two facilities. We have our main downtown campus that was designed in 1972, so about 50 years old, as well as an annex that's a remodeled, it would have been an old armory that we house like our work release type individuals. Right now, everybody's at our downtown site. The DOC did give us that 90-day downgrade notice, and we received two extensions. We'll be looking for another extension this summer. The total project costs, we did an RFP for a facility study. The board evaluated four different options: remodeling the downtown existing site and expanding there, looking at the annex location, a green site, and as well as collaborating with a neighboring county. We partner closely with the DOC as well as our consultants in this project. The cost ranged from $44 million at the annex location to almost $60 million at our downtown site. A green site came in at approximately $48 million. Dollars. And when we evaluated that between the $44 million at the annex location is landlocked and would prevent us in the future if we had additional needs or growth, we would not be able to accommodate it at that location. So we did look at the green site as a solution for a combined public safety center and jail. So I guess right now what we're looking for, we had a design development estimate done, and we were really close, about $49.3 million. So we're feeling really good about the pricing on this. We go out to bid next week, and we're just looking at ways that we can finance this that kind of minimizes the impact on our property tax payers. We're looking at an 8% increase if we do a 30-year bond for the whole project. Our ask is $25 million, approximately 50% of the total project costs.
Thank you, Ms. Folstad. Sheriff Thomas, can you hop on real quickly and identify yourself for the record, please? Thank you.
Hi, Jesse Thomas, Rice County Sheriff.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Representative Lippert, for your presentation. Next on the agenda, House File 2784, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And should I offer my amendment first here?
Please explain it for reference, Representative Erdahl. Thank you.
Okay, I have a list of criteria for dealing with some of these projects, and what I'm adding to it is addressing the net tax capacity as my amendment. So I'd like to include that as one of my criteria for the bill that I'll explain.
Thank you, Representative. Please proceed.
Okay, so we've had a lot of discussion today about proposals to pay for fire and police. And there are questions that remain about this and we're going to have to address, should we do them at all? I have some folks that don't think that we should, that these should be borne by local taxpayers. However, if we do decide that we should be doing these, I think that there should be some type of criteria. And that's what my bill does. It provides some criteria if we choose to go forward in this. It states that in order to be eligible, and I'm dealing here with small towns that have less ability to pay for these things. A town under 2,000 people that has an executed and valid fire service contract with at least one other municipality, that it has at least 50 calls for fire and rescue services in a year, and that the has a net capacity, net tax capacity, which is very low, meaning that their tax capacity per capita is less than the median net tax capacity per capita in the state. So that's basically all it is. It is saying that if we go forward with some of these, there maybe should be some criteria that guides us.
Before we go to members' question, I believe you have Mr. O'Rourke here for testimony, Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
Mr. O'Rourke, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We represent the over 700 cities statewide that have populations under 5,000. We fully support House File 2784. This legislation would create an opportunity for Minnesota's smallest cities to address much needed infrastructure updates for the emergency services that they provide not only to their own community, but also surrounding communities as well. As you've seen in tours and testimony today, and over the last decade, the number of requests from communities across the state with local emergency services has been growing. House File 2784 would provide a program to allow the Commissioner of Deed to work with Minnesota's smallest cities to allow them to participate and focus in this in these requests as well, focusing efforts on those communities that have high activity based on the number of times that their emergency services are being called into action and responding to incidents. This bill would give the small cities of the state a foothold and participation in what a lot of their larger cities are asking the state to do. We support this bill and will continue to work with the author. We thank Representative Erdahl for introducing it and Chair Lee for your time today in this committee.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for your work on this. I, too, have been working on this, talking to the Fire Marshal's office as well as the public safety and interviewing some of the rural areas also on this project, because we do have an overwhelming request, but I don't think we'd be doing justice by just putting some limitations on this. There's also a grand scheme and plan that we have to address here in the legislature of recruitment and retention in fire departments. Some of these fire departments are gonna be obsolete because they just cannot get members. We may be looking at district-wide fire here in the soon and very near future, the same with EMS. And so as we go through this, we need to look at regionalization as part of this, as the state making any investment anywhere to make sure that there's regional approach to this also. So I think there's more to it than what's here. I understand that there's always needs, and I understand that everybody wants their own fire station or their own EMS or their own police station, but we really have to look at this as what's best for the state and what the investment of the state's going to be. And so I've done pretty a large amount of work on this already. So I really look forward to working with you on this and kind of getting down to the brass tracks over what the best investment is for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Representative Erdahl for making an attempt to solve some of these issues here. This committee has a decision to make. Are we going to be a bonding committee for statewide projects, or are we going to build every small town city hall, fire hall, and ambulance shed? So we've got some, and this is so not partisan. I mean, as you saw today, Mr. Chairman, we saw requests from both sides of the aisle. But what I'm struggling with is, let's just pick Edina here. I have a city, Lanesboro, about 700 people, a wonderful city, not a wealthy city, and they just did their own fire hall. Now, how do I explain to them that they had to pay for theirs and we're going to pay for Edina's? I really have some concerns about this because, for example, Houston County just built a jail. How many jails did we hear today? So is this committee going to fund local projects, or are we going to do the statewide projects? It's not like we have enough money to take care of the statewide projects. So I would just suggest to the folks who testified today, I thank them for their testimony, but they had better find some contingency plans for funding because I don't think that this committee wants to get in the business of funding local projects. And every one of them we heard today was very necessary, very important. But we have to fund those as we have in the past, not come to the state when we should be fixing our university buildings and we should be doing WIF and PFA. So this committee has a decision to make. And like I said, all these projects are very valid projects. We just, they have to fund them on their own. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Chair Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I appreciate the criteria idea, but I don't understand the 2,000 inhabitant idea. And Mr. O'Rourke, I thought the small cities were under 5,000. And for this particular criteria. Representative Erdahl, you're saying that it should be just under 2,000?
Yes. Representative
Erdahl. Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, I said 2,000. It's a fairly arbitrary number. I, again, sharing some of Representative David's concerns, I'm trying to limit this to those cities that are in the least ability to pay for these things themselves. And so the concept is, are we going, I think the first thing that as a committee we'll have to deal with is, are we going to do these at all? And if we are, what will the criteria be? And I'm open to revisiting the criteria as we go through this.
I see. And then, so Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, you're saying that you want criteria, but this was your suggestion at the time, but it could change. But in our testimony today, we heard that for at least three of those requests, for some help from the city was because the cities aren't getting LGA and they're rapidly growing in the last two decades. And so they have as much, perhaps as much reason to ask for a question that, or for ask for help as a city under 2000 would have. And so I think if we are going to establish criteria, that's fine. But we have to be careful on what the limits are and what the tax burden on the people of Minnesota is in that particular area because of the project.
Ms. Chairman, Representative Murphy, certainly you're raising good points. But again, the bigger question is, are we going to do these? And if we are, how are we going to do them? And I'm giving you one plan right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. The last bill on the agenda for today is House File 4131. Representative Vang will be presenting on behalf of Chair Nelson, who is chairing the State Gov Finance Committee. Please proceed, Representative Vang.
Mr. Chair, for your time and flexibility. So House File 4131 appropriates $20 million from general bonds to build a new fire station, a space for a multi-agency emergency operations center, regional training opportunities, and other associated site improvements. And I will defer the rest of my time to my testifier, Chief Cunningham.
Chief Cunningham, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is John Cunningham. I'm the Fire Chief and Director of Emergency Management for the City of Brooklyn Park. I also happen to be the President of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. Thank you for extending me the invitation to speak to you this morning about investing into the future of vital public safety infrastructure initiatives. And wear both hats, so I appreciate the discussion and listening to all the testimony this morning. As the sixth largest city in Minnesota and the fourth largest in the metropolitan area, the Brooklyn Park Fire Department serves a very diverse population of over 86,000 people. Brooklyn Park firefighters answer over 8,200 fire, medical, and rescue calls every year. Just as the population of our city and our region has grown exponentially, so has the demand for fire and pre-hospital emergency medical care. With over a 34% increase in emergency medical and fire responses since 2010, our city continues to invest in the future of the fire department to ensure that we can continue providing exceptional care to those who need it the most. For example, Brooklyn Park has added 20 new full-time firefighter positions in just the last 2 years. This would not have been possible without receiving a $3.3 million federal SAFER grant to cover the cost of salaries and benefits for 12 of these new positions. On the heels of a comprehensive community and data-driven strategic planning process that we completed in 2019, We also recognize the urgent need to evaluate our current fire stations. A third-party analysis has identified over $40 million in needed improvements to Brooklyn Park's four existing stations. Designed when our department was primarily staffed with volunteer and on-call members, our current stations are ailing and needed repairs and improvements, lack the room for expansion to accommodate full-time staffing models, and need critical health and safety improvements, such as ventilation systems and barriers to keep contaminants and harmful byproducts contained in the apparatus areas. A limited number of showers do not allow firefighters to quickly decontaminate after every fire, and those spaces are shared with other staff and visitors. Just as the SAFER grant helped us fund additional staff, we simply cannot afford the immediate $40 million investment that is needed. The community of Brooklyn Park and our firefighters are asking for $20 million in bonding funds to design and build a new central station, which will also serve as hands-on training facility and a multi-agency EOC or emergency operations center. As one of the only full-time staff suburban departments in the Seven County Metro Region, we are proud partners with our neighboring jurisdictions and are active participants in automatic and mutual aid plans that extend not only throughout Hennepin County, but across the region. Our new central station will allow us to not only strategically serve the Brooklyn Park community, but also our neighbors, including the ability to deploy a 24/7 staff specialized aerial truck in the region. Last year alone, we responded to over 40 fire and rescue incidents outside of our city to support our neighbors. Most recently, this past Saturday, we sent two on-duty engine companies to the city of New Hope for a multi-alarm apartment fire. One of our engines was the very first truck to arrive and was able to quickly get water on the fire, preventing it from spreading further. Our second engine quickly found, located, and rescued a victim that was trapped in a smoke-filled hallway on the first floor, and they were safely able to get that person out and in the hands of the ambulance. The investment into our central station allows us to continue working on funding for strategies to complete the needed investments into the other three stations. Finally, our central station also houses the city's Emergency Operations Center, or EOC. Over the past 2 years, our EOC has been activated several times, including the longest activation to support the response to COVID-19. When a pandemic struck, we had to make the difficult decision to relocate our firefighters from Central. We simply ran out of room and didn't want to risk exposing our on-duty crews that were working and as well as the staff working in the EOC. The job simply can't be done from home or remotely. The EOC was also activated because of the significant civil unrest in the area and in preparation for the trials of Derek Chauvin and Kim Potter. Brooklyn Park's EOC became a multi-agency coordination center, not only for Brooklyn Park agencies, but also for neighboring jurisdictions and public safety partners from the region and the state. Even in the middle of a pandemic, the room was completely full of leadership from over a dozen agencies and partners. During the civil unrest, every firefighter that was able to work was called into duty. Lacking adequate space in both the EOC, our command staff and firefighters, every usable space was used, actually including my office. And there is a handout accompanying this that visualizes the challenges that we were running into. Also, the age and design of the facility also lacks the appropriate safeguards. We had to actually put contingency plans in place in the event we had to evacuate this building and move to an alternative location. I really appreciate your consideration and partnership with this project. As the last few years have truly demonstrated, we are stronger together. I'm happy to answer any questions and appreciate you looking at this. I guess in closing, we all recognize the challenges that face the public safety agencies, especially fire departments in the state. Brooklyn Park is one of those communities that has really led the efforts on trying to modernize our fire protection services in the community and making those investments. But we realize that we can't do this alone. We know that the reports that show across the state is the Minnesota Fire Service is significantly lacked in funding holistically across the state. And we've ranked anywhere from 44th to 48th and per household funding for the last decade or so, as published by the Center for Fiscal Excellence. So we appreciate the support and stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Cunningham. Chair Murphy.
Chief Cunningham, I'm familiar with problems with public safety and rivers. The fact that rivers divide communities. but you're the one that has talked about public safety and partnerships. And so do you consider Coon Rapids as part of your public safety area?
Chief Cunningham.
Chair Lee and Representative Murphy, good to see you again, Representative Murphy, from my days in Elk River. Yes, actually, Coon Rapids is one of our partners. We actually respond jointly to the Mississippi River on any either water incident, as well as we go into their community on the 610 corridor for motor vehicle crashes, and then they support us. So we truly believe, and whoever can get there fastest, it doesn't matter what the side of the truck says, we're all there to support one another. So we actually do work with Coon Rapids on a regular basis, and we support one another. They're one of our strongest mutual aid partners, in addition to West Metro and Anoka and Hennepin counties.
Thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome.
Representative Hewitt.
Real quick, Chief, do you run on all EMS calls or just when requested?
Chief Cunningham.
Yeah, Chair Lee, Representative Hewitt, good morning. We actually do respond on almost every single EMS call as a first response agency. The only ones that we don't go on are just the general illness calls that they just need a simple ambulance. But we go on roughly 7,200 EMS calls every single year and respond to almost every single call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Thank you, Representative Vane, for presenting on behalf of Representative Nelson. Members, that concludes the agenda for today. You know, as all of us have heard from different local projects throughout the state and from the committee discussion, there's much more work for us to do as a committee on public safety, whether that's through fire, law enforcement. This is something that we all need to contribute to this conversation. We really appreciate Representative Erdahl and Representative Hewitt and their work on this. And members, in particular, in one of the discussion, a local project that presented today was brought up, the city of Edina. I will encourage the members who brought it up and the bill presenter to have a conversation on why there is a need for that local community. And members will have further discussions about some of the work that we'll be doing and that we have ahead of us on Thursday. I do want to note that the committee will be starting at 8 a.m. and not the usual 8:30 a.m. Committee. Having no other business before us, this committee is adjourned.